Hello and welcome to Say It in Red, a podcast about visual novels and sometimes, like today, kinetic novels. I'm Runa.
I'm Sarah.
And today, as I alluded to previously, we are talking about a kinetic novel. We are talking about Loopers, which is a Key game. And you may be familiar with Key as a studio from such projects as, Small Works, Sarah. you've played some of their small works, right? Like Clannad.
Yeah.
Canon. Just small things like that.
I think Clannad is the only one I've actually played.
They're very widely known. Yeah, though. Yeah.
I feel like probably if you're new into visual novels, you may not have heard of them, but they were
big
when we were in college.
That's true. Like, back then, that was like, I knew about Tokimeki Memorial, but that wasn't a thing that I could play. Like,
right.
we couldn't get to Tokimeki Memorial, so I just, like, knew that was a thing.
Right.
And then, like, Key, as a studio, was making all of the things that were getting, like, the anime adaptations.
Exactly.
Which is how we found out about a lot of the visual novels and other games. To clarify, the difference between a kinetic novel and a visual novel is pretty simple. We've talked about it in passing before, but just to be clear about it, a kinetic novel is simply a game that usually has either NVL or ADV, which is the novel style or adventure game style, text boxes, and you progress through it, and either there's no choices or the choices don't technically do anything. There's no branches, there's no, like, unlocks, there's no gate and key mechanisms, as people sometimes refer to them in the visual novel pathing language. Basically, it is a game that you just read straight through from start to finish, and you will get the same story as every other player on the first try.
It's really leaning into the novel part of visual slash kinetic novel.
Yes. And, like, sometimes you may hear people also talk about sound novels, which isn't something that we hear so much anymore. But, like, if you remember back in, like, our Higurashi playthroughs, and if you are doing that in the, like, the producer's room or, like, the developer's room that Ryukishi had as the bonus on those, he would refer to the games as sound novels, and that's because previously kinetic novels in that style were also called sound novels because, of course, they're novels with sound.
Right, right.
Just like visual novels are novels with visuals, which is like, you know, that's not exactly all that they are. But
yeah.
Just giving you a sense of the etymology without spending too much time, because I realize that I've already gone on longer than I intended to about, like, terminology. Anyway.
At this point, you can really just think of kinetic novel as a visual novel without options.
Yeah,
basically
no branches or dialogue choices, so you just have fun reading a nice story. And we did in fact read a story pretty briskly. Loopers.
Well, I was gonna say, we didn't really talk about, like, the thing that Key is really known for, which comes up here.
That's true.
And, like, they're definitely known for, like, sad melodramatic sick girls, I think, is kind of the reputation they have.
That's true. They do have, I keep forgetting about that, even though it's, like, a key feature of all their most prominent games that I can think of, is that there is always a girl who... So, okay, first off, more than that, heterosexual romance.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Heterosexual romance, and usually the main girl or one of the main girls is either sickly or in some way just, like, has that sort of downtrodden appearance and personality at the start.
Like, I don't know if that's what they are doing nearly as much now, but, like, especially with, like, Clannad and Air, like, that is what they were known for, to be, like, the heterosexual romances that you cry at.
Yes, basically. And I mean, like, you can see this sort of, like, genre of romance fiction in lots of different places, but Key sort of, like, had that as part of their studio style, right? Other things that are part of their studio style include, like, a general sort of, like, focus on the emotional character arcs and relationships over plot most of the time.
Yeah. A little bit more slice of life, I guess.
Yeah, but Key's visual novels tend to be things that people think of more as, like, you know, they're not often, even when they're, like, fantastical and have supernatural elements, they feel a lot more grounded in, like, day-to-day emotional lives of characters. Plot is rarely the forefront, and you know, this is one of the reasons why you often hear, like, that reputation of, like, visual novels are so, like, over-emotional and focused on, like, these plotting romances. And this is one of the things that led a lot of people, reviewers and stuff, to call visual novels like Clannad not really games.
Right, right.
Way back in the day.
Also worth mentioning that, like, definitely an expectation of a male audience, right? Like a straight man.
That's true. That's true. Audience. Yeah. Because these games are very much like they're heterosexual, but they're heterosexual written for a broad but presumed straight male audience, yeah. Mostly.
Yeah. Which is to say, like, we are not really the audience for a key visual novel.
Yes. And so why, Sarah, would we read a key visual novel? Actually, like, after talking through all of these points,
why?
I'm actually starting to wonder, why did we play a key visual novel?
Because Rikishi, our man, our guy.
Ah, that's right.
Gender neutral, right. Our guy.
Yeah, our guy. And Rikishi wrote this game. And you can even see 7th expansion right there in the credits. And so it is, I mean, the broad pitch for this game is... It is a time loop story that is written by Rikishi and developed by Ki.
And that's sure what it is.
That, sure it. Like, literally, I have never heard a more accurate pitch for a game.
It is if exactly you, that.
That is the most succinct way to tell me exactly. And that is exactly what this game is. Like,
yeah.
100%, there is no error in that pitch.
Like, first introductory scene, I was like, yeah, Rikishi's writing this. And it's like, there's something kind of fun about reading something where, like, you can see his touch in it. Like, if anyone else had written this game, it would have not interested me as much. But because I'm so familiar with, like, the touches that Rikishi does, like, the very first opening scene is just, like, a interaction between a girl in a hospital and a boy visiting his mom in the hospital, which is, like, like absolutely like a key scene as in like key genre.
Sarah, the very very first scene is that storybook.
Oh yeah, that's true.
Yeah, the fairy tale storybook thing about a witch explaining the process of a magic spell to a child, which I was like, okay, all right, let's do this. All right.
Yeah, it comes up much later in a fun way, but like I wouldn't have minded it being more central to everything. But
yeah.
But yeah, like, the very first, I guess, character scene, it was, like, it's being written in a way that Rikishi is definitely, like, if you've read Higurashi, like, his way of, like, writing kids, interacting with each other, and, like, finding ways of this kind of really pat scene to make it kind of a little bit more fun, or a little bit more, like, characterful.
Yeah.
And I think that kind of comes down to, like, what Rikishi, well, I mean, he is bringing a little bit of horror elements here, but, like, light touch horror.
Yeah, this is the again, key visual novels and games are not my typical, like, they are not things that I often play.
Yeah.
So I can't speak to the full scope of them, but I would hazard a guess that this is probably as, like, visceral and intense as most key games will get.
Yeah.
As a general, like, barometer of if you are comfortable with this sort of, like, this style and level of, like, tension and horror and everything, Ki is probably a good style and fit for you. And if you want something more intense, there's lots of options.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, so let's briefly talk about the setup for this game, the characters, and we can probably summarize the plot in all of 10 minutes, because again, this game, and that's not a criticism. I want to be clear that I say we can summarize the plot of this game in 10 minutes as a positive thing, because this game is not really too much about its plot.
Like, it's doing what it wants to do. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that works for it. Like, if this game had focused on the plot and was a lot longer, I could see it working really well. But since this game is, and dear listeners, this game is brisk. This game took us, what, like, 4 or 5 hours to read through, I think? Maybe less.
Longer for me, but I hit the middle part and put it away and was like, Like, I definitely hit that point where I was like, oh, I have to pick it back up. Like, I just was, like, not motivated to get it up.
I will admit, I also hit the middle part and took a break, but that's because I was crying.
You for a different reason. I was, like, past that point, and I was like, oh, I guess the plot will pick up in a second.
Yes, so here's the other thing, is that the reason why I was able to get through this so quickly is that thank you, Yukishi, for adding Yuri to a key game. That really saved me.
The girls are so good.
Anyway, so the game starts off with this scene of two children playing in a hospital room, and there is a girl who's bedridden and a boy who's there visiting his mother. And after he's done with the visit, he's waiting around for his dad to pick him up. And he sees this sad, sullen girl sitting in her hospital bed, and he decides to cheer her up by showing her how to do a treasure hunt. And so he hides a little, like, Triceratops eraser that he had that's, like, a glow-in-the-dark Triceratops eraser. You know those, like, shaped animal erasers? And he hides that on, like, her bed somewhere and asks her to go and find it, and she finds it, and she had so much fun. And it's just a very nice, sweet sort of memory from, like, I think she's like 5 and he's like 7 or something like that. I don't remember their relative ages, but time gets wobbly in this game. They're not super important. Anyway, the magic spell at the beginning was described to us pretty simply. So basically, a witch tells a child that she will cast a magic spell, and what it allows them to do is you take your most precious possession, the thing that you treasure the most, and then you give it away. And as you give that away, you tell the other person to also give it away. And each person whose hands it passes through empowers it with more and more magic until the spell becomes more and more powerful. So, you know, that the idea of you having to give up something very precious to you, but also keep it going. Because if you find it again, if that treasure makes its way back to you, the spell will be broken. And so you should never go and search for the thing that you willingly gave away for the power of this magic. That's sort of like our first opening part. Yep. This game actually has 2 openings, which is kind of fun also.
We always love a late opening, yeah.
Yeah, it has this opening after this point, which leads us into the present day, and then it has another opening when we've got, like, the squad together.
Yeah.
Which is very silly fun. Anyway, so then we meet up with our protagonist, the boy from this scene, Tyler. It's very funny because they give every character, like, every character has a name that is both, like, literally pronounced like a general English name.
But they've, like, adjusted their own names and just, like, given themselves kind of an English name in a very cute way. So Taida is Tyler. And, like, it's like a lot of them are adjusting their last names into different names.
Yes. Except for Mia, who's just Mia.
Yeah.
Mia is just Mia. But yeah, we have Tyler, who is obsessed with treasure hunting and geocaches and geohunting. Like, if you're familiar with this, it's, you know, people hide different little things around in geocaches around a city or a place. You put it in an app. Someone goes and hunts it based on, like, the coordinates or, like, a map pin on there. And then you find the little thing. And in the ones that are set up that Tyler is looking through, it's, like, you find a little, like, box that's got a thing in it. And you open it up. And it's normally, like, a plastic Tupperware or similar container. There's a logbook where you write down, hey, I found this and here's my username. And maybe there's, like, a little charm or a toy or a trinket. And good etiquette for geohunting is, like, you take whatever's there and then you leave something in its place so that someone else has, like, a little nice charm to find when they get there. But this is basically just the engine that runs most of the story. We're also very quickly introduced to Hilda and Leona, my faves.
Perfect girls.
The girls, where Hilda is, like, freaking out. She's just gotten off work at her late night convenience store job. Leona, her super bestie gal pal, is there waiting to hang out with her, but then sees Tyler late at night and is like, hey, bet that guy's a vampire. Don't you think that guy's a vampire? And Hilda is just, like, freaking out full on. Like, no, that's not, vampires aren't real. Okay, that's a vampire. You can't scare me. I'm going to kick that vampire's ass so he doesn't mess with us.
Oh, and wait, it's Leona Tyler from, like, elementary school.
Yes, it's literally Tyler from elementary school. They find out very quickly that this is Tyler, who both of them went to elementary school with, and they're all in high school now, but they go off on one of Tyler's late night treasure hunts and hear a story about, you know, the legendary Sagashi Onna, which is like an urban legend in the vein of like Kushisake Onna or other sorts of things that you might have heard. This one in particular is, hey, there's a woman who's searching for something, and if you see her, she'll ask you to help her find her heart. You have to help her find it, and then you have to tell her that, here, I found it, otherwise she'll curse you. And so as they're searching around, Hilda starts to see this, like, ghostly apparition of a girl saying that she has to find it, she's searching for it, and everything gets really, really spooky creepy after that. And
look, the setup of this visual, or kinetic novel, however you want to say it, is very good. I think it, like, once you get past the setup, then it's just like, oh, we're just, this is life now.
Yeah. Honestly, so my personal stance is like, listen, we can call it a visual novel. Yeah. We know what we mean.
Yeah, yeah.
There's not branching pathways, and it is technically the wrong term for it, but, like,
I don't care.
We know what we're talking about. So we'll probably use it interchangeably. We do know that this is a kinetic novel and not a visual novel, but we'll probably say visual novel sometimes just because...
I kind of consider visual novel like the header above sound or kinetic novel, but...
But, yeah, I think it's a pretty strong start. It's pretty fun. It's a pretty nice, compelling sort of, like, opening intro with these three characters and a little bit of spookiness and, like, some cute fun antics and shenanigans.
Yeah, I think Hilda's kind of a standout at the first half of this game.
God, Hilda really is. Hilda, my favorite character alongside Leona in this game. Yeah. Their interactions are just, like, priceless. Leona is, like, constantly snickering to herself right behind as she's, like, scaring Hilda or, like, teasing her in some way.
Leona's funny because she's, like, she's got the vibe of, like, a little punk, mm-hmm. but she's actually like a really, like, a good student, good girl, but with, like, this kind of edge to her that's very funny.
Yeah. Well, it's because she, like many people, have that vibe of, like, I am the good student, good girl, but then, like, I have crushing test anxiety that my parents won't do anything about other than blame me for it. So, Yeah, she's
great. I love her voice, too. Like, it's just perfect.
She really is perfect. But anyway, some weird stuff happens. I'm going to gloss over a couple details, but some weird stuff happens. Eventually, Hilda and Leona get back after the treasure hunt, and Hilda headbutts Leona, and then she seems to, like, just freak out. Like,
And to note, like, Hilda, like, headbutting is Hilda's, like, gimmick that she does.
Oh, yeah, like, headbutting and, like, playfully, like, sort of headbutting.
Like, not in a way that hurts, really, just, you know.
I mean, it does sound like it hurts a little bit, but, like, the same as, like, flicking someone on the arm or something.
Right. More annoying than anything.
She headbutts Leona at, like, 5 a.m., and Leona suddenly freaks out, yells at her in a way that she's never really yelled or exploded at her before, and then promptly falls unconscious on the ground. Hilda is like, you're fucking with me again. You're messing with me. I don't know. Why would you do something like that? This isn't funny. So she panics and she leaves. And she's like, Leona's gonna text me any minute. Right. She's gonna text me any minute and say that everything's fine.
And be
fine.
Like, haha, you fell for it.
Yeah. She doesn't get any text. And also we see her phone background is her doing the heart sign with her thumb and index finger over a sandy beach in which they have drawn Hilda plus Leona inside of
it.
A heart.
Such a great, like, background narrative storytelling.
truly setting up my expectations.
Yeah.
But then meanwhile, Tyler across town is, like, finishing up his geo hunting. He's like, wow, I just found a cache, but I think this is the same one that I saw yesterday, and also I just heard this weird thing about a potential suspicious murderer on the prowl, and then saw this guy coming out of someone's house and, like, chases after this random guy, gets drop-kicked by a small girl who ominously says that, oh, the spiral is expanding now. It's probably going to capture you and Hilda soon. If only it had captured you sooner, that might have been better for Leona. But, well, do your best, and we'll see you again soon. And, that's basically what sort of starts us off, because this game is about kids trapped in a time loop on the day of August 1st.
Like, so quickly it becomes, like, the problem isn't, like, yes, getting out of the loop is a thing that we want to do, but the problem is really, like, how do you survive being stuck in one day where your whatever you do has no lasting impact, and, like, you're just kind of, like, yes, there are ways that you can, like, rig the system because you know that everything's going to be reset at the end of the day. Like, if as long as you have money, like, spending money is no issue. And, like, you can go do whatever you want. If you get hurt or whatever, you'll be fine the next day.
Yeah, like, even if you die, you'll just, like, your body and everything will be reset to the exact position where you were. So one of the things that, like, really tears Hilda up is, like, when she's worried at home at the start of the loop that she killed or, like, she somehow hurt Leona, she's also, like, fighting with her dad because her dad, like, barges into her room, and so she accidentally pushes her dad down the stairs and kills
him. She's having a real, like, breakdown and is, like, barely, like, this is actually kind of one of the creepier parts of the game.
Yeah.
But then just kind of, like, we never really get back to this level. Like, this is the most, like, Ryukishi, like, everyone's...
It resets and her dad is fine and is like, hey, what are you doing? And so, this is basically where things stand, is now that they've realized, okay, now we're in August 1st forever. We're stuck in a loop. They're contacted by the guy that Tyler tried to chase, and his name is Simon. He is the leader of this group who is trapped in the time loop.
Has apparently been here for about, like, 15 years, apparently.
Yeah. He's been in August 1st for 15 years. So, like, that's several thousands of days.
Yeah.
And he is, like, adamant about studying this and figuring out what they can do. And he's, like, figured out all of these different things. He apparently found out that there was a group in Maryland in the United States who also experienced a time loop like this while camping. And, like, he talked to them and tried to get as many details as possible. And he's basically crunching numbers and running data based entirely on his own didactic memory.
Yeah.
That's not the right word. Didactic memory is not the right word. Eidetic memory. But Simon is also accompanied and introduces them to Mia, who is the cute girl on the cover. So you know that she's very important. And she's the one who talked to Tyler ominously about being drawn into the spiral. And Mia is our heroine of the game, although she doesn't immediately show up really prominently. It takes her a little bit, but
yeah,
Mia is the very quiet, sort of, like, soft-spoken, monotone and sullen type, mysterious girl at first, but then very quickly becomes, like, the sort of girl who's very easily excited by all of the fun, fanciful things that Tyler does, and then is, like, struggling with the fact that she, for so long, was just, like, kind of numb. She was the second one who was drawn into the spiral, and so she was in middle school when she was drawn in, but she's been there so long that functionally she's, like, older than the high schoolers who are there with her. And Simon also, like, looks maybe, like, early 20s, late teens, but he is probably, like, functionally in his 30s or 40s right now.
Yeah.
It's one of those weird things that the game also says, like, well, when we exit the loop, it'll sort of, like, collapse our memories into a hazy dream-like state. So that's lots of things that we can unpack later.
Yeah.
But it's little ideas like that that I do appreciate, that it's like, ah, that gives me a lot to chew on. The game will not really chew on this, but, like, worth thinking about interesting ideas that Ryukishi is sort of, like, injecting.
Yeah, there's so many interesting ideas, like, on the edge of this game that is really...
Yeah. One of the things that becomes immediately clear, though, so we get introduced to three other characters rapidly. But before that, I do want to talk about the fact that, so Hilda is drawn in here and is shocked to learn that Leona also was one of these loopers. But Leona is now completely asleep. Leona is, like, in a coma, and every single morning when the loop restarts, Leona falls immediately into a coma.
And they talk about, like, one of the challenges of, like, being a looper is, like, you eventually you just, like, either your sense of self starts to break down, or, like, you just, like, get to a point where you cannot handle the repeating the same day, and either you just give up and your body, like, breaks, you just kind of shut down like Leona does, or in the case of the other two, Simon goes and kills you to make sure that you stay conscious.
Yeah, basically, they call it, like, going beast, like, turning into a beast, or, like, beast mode, which is a little bit over the top, but I do think that it sort of captures the vibe that they were talking about, because they talked about, so this game, as is, like, characteristic Ryukishi style, but, like, I think some people who read this and don't read Other Key things might think that Other Key stuff does not delve into these issues, but I'm pretty sure most of them do, just not in the sort of way that Ryukishi handles it. So they talk about,
just with a different tone.
They talk a lot about self-harm and the realistic ways that, like, teens or, like, young adults might self-harm, or in the case of the two that Simon killed over and over again to force them into comas, they tried to, like, self-harm on air on television to, like, demonstrate that they were immortal and that the days kept looping and they were basically losing their grasp on reality, with Mia and Simon's concern being that they would still remember this after they got out of the loop.
Right.
And they'd have to adjust to regular life at some point. Like, they're going to get out of the loop at some point.
I was definitely expecting this to be more of a focus on this game. Like, the kind of, like, and, like, it's there with Hilda. Like, with this idea of, like, oh, these characters have to, like, I was expecting the current characters to have to grapple with this more instead of it being kind of off screen for the characters who have been already kind of taken care of.
Yeah.
So, like, we do see it building up with Hilda, but at the same time, it feels like Tyler is the magic. We won't have to worry about that anymore because Tyler is the perfect glooper.
Yes. Well, the other thing is that I think, like, the sum total of days that, like, so compare, like, Simon and Mia being there for, like, thousands of days. The others probably over 1,000 or 2,000 days, you know, like, several years in.
And then here, like, 3 months happen, and then they find.
Yeah, I think, like, literally they get out before, like, the four-month mark.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's pretty brisk on their side, so I can understand it also, but it's also, like, one of those things where, like, damn, if this were a longer game.
There were moments, especially in the second half, where I was like, this game is very silly.
Yeah. The game really does sort of, like, do a dive down towards some, like, dark stuff, and then it pulls back and says, oh, aren't you glad we didn't go in there?
Yeah.
And honestly, I think that works for this story, but it is one of those that leaves you craving more, like, ah, damn.
And, like, there are definitely moments where, like, things, like, could have been more complicated, or, like, it seems like they would have had more trouble there. And I'm like, I wasn't sad that they didn't have trouble, like, getting the other two people out of the hospital, for example. And they just were like, well, we tested it on previous days and it's done. But at the same time, it did feel like things were just kind of, like, and it was fine.
Yeah, that's the other issue is that, like, because they can just test out trial and error their way through just about any problem, a lot of the incidental things, like, so they've committed the two people who Simon forced into comas into the hospital, like, the local hospital, and Leona's also there, but she was just, like, they brought her there from, like, via ambulance to have her vitals monitored and everything at the start of every morning loop. And they just, like, have this setup of, okay, here's the trouble if we've got to get them out of the hospital at the end of this, but we've just actually just trial and errored it to the point where we can do it smoothly without issue, which is a nice plot convenience, but it's also one of those where you can see that, you know, if this had been a bigger story,
that would have been a bigger key point. Yeah.
Yeah. It is. Honestly, I'm like, I don't mind that this was a shorter story, but it's also something that's atypical because, like, you don't usually read kinetic or visual novels that are like, okay, let's be real punchy and succinct.
And also, like, there is just something a little odd about a looping game that is kinetic, a kinetic novel. Like, there, like, to me, like, anything where you're, like, redoing days or something like that, kind of naturally feeds itself to, like, I don't know, typical visual novel trees. And, like, well, on the one hand, Rikishi doesn't tend to do that at all. But it is kind of fascinating to have, like, this game that is linear, but is, but in other ways, maybe it makes sense because it is linear in that they are trapped in one day, but still.
Yeah. I mean, I think that both of those impulses feel right, because part of the reason why the visual novel sort of like branching style works with time loop so well is because you have that sort of ludonarrative harmony between the way that the player is restarting the game to make different choices and the characters are restarting the timeline to make different choices,
right?
Like, those align very well, and so it just, it feels really nice and makes sense in that. And I mean, this is true for just about all formats of games where you're, like, intentionally restarting an area or a segment over and over again and making different choices to try and proceed or change outcomes.
Right.
But yeah, also, like, Ryukishi doesn't often make branching visual novels, so it does sort of align very well there. And, you know, I think that there's some interesting things that you could probably dig into with regards to, like, how does it feel for a player to have, like, no agency versus agency in a story where you're talking about time loops and trial and error to try and discover different outcomes.
Yeah.
But this game is written such in a way that it's not really too, like, it's something that you might find jarring if your expectation is time loop stories equal branching visual novels, but other than that, it doesn't really feel like an issue too much.
At the same time, we're doing Steins Gate next month, and that one is also linear. Interesting.
Ah, yes. Yes, Steins Gate. So, we've talked a lot about the way in which this game is sort of, like, structured. So we've got this setup where characters are in the spiral, they're looping through the same day, and one of the biggest difficulties is, first off, how do we keep ourselves sort of, like, grounded as people and not just, like, go into ultra-hyper-depression?
Yeah.
Or just, like, completely dissociate into feelings of unreality as we're repeating the same day with seemingly no consequences other than our accumulated memories?
The answer is treasure hunting, obviously.
Yeah. And so, yeah, that's basically the solution that Tyler proffers, is that treasure hunting can definitely reinvigorate all of these people because it can help them find the things that are precious to them and remember what was important. And really, you can make a strong case that, like, the treasure hunting is aesthetic. It is simply, like, because maybe Ryukishi or someone else who was working on the script at an early stage was like, hey, we can use this, like, geocaching app as, like, a really fun hook.
I believe, according to the Wikipedia, it was Key who decided the geo hunting.
Gotcha. Yeah, I figured that it might be one of those things where they presented him with a brief, and he was like, okay, here's what I can do with that.
But it's very Ryukishi, like, the thing that he leans into with this prompt is, oh, this is, again, like, one of Ryukishi's kind of recurring emotional beats is, like, these were things created for someone else to find. This is a means of communication between a creator and their audience.
Yeah, that is something that, like, I was like, ah, yes, now I remember very keenly who is writing this story.
Yeah.
Because the priority of Tyler when he's explaining why treasure hunting will help the other members of the Loopers sort of, like, keep themselves grounded and remember what they were so passionate about before they got stuck in the loop, is that he's going to pay attention to them, figure out what they care about, what's important to them, and then basically give them an activity that helps them rediscover that spark or just reconnect with the feelings that they've been estranged from through the process of going through all of these multiple reiterative loops of the same day over and over. We've got Joe, whose personality is Himbo.
Mm-hmm.
Joe is a very compelling character, though, because he has a lot of just, like, he looks at Tyler and they have himbo-to-himbo communication. And his whole deal is that he is a bright and bubbly guy, but he is so, so depressed now that he realized that all his working out, he won't get any sick gains.
Yeah.
Because all of the sick gains he gets at the gym reset at the end of every day. He can do as many reps as he wants, and his muscles will never get bigger.
There's such an interesting thread with the three loopers who get introduced as kind of secondary characters, because they're all about, like, the conflict between the desire, the love of doing something, and the need for either an audience or a response, like, and how, like, what happens when you get divorced from, like,
mm-hmm.
There's Joe who wants to exercise and get his gains, and then there's the other two who are, like, artists and YouTubers, and so it's, like, they, like, as creators, as people who are doing things for the process and are driven by the outcomes, like, what do you do when there are no outcomes because you're going to get reset every day?
Yeah, so Rita Pan is the artist who is a chuny goth. Love her. Very cute style and outfit. She basically is, like, got her start as a fan artist and now works doing professional commissions and artwork. And is feeling kind of burned out, both because she can't, like, no matter how many lines she draws in a day, no matter how many commissions she finishes, they'll disappear by the next day. And also, like, you know, even outside of that, it kind of reinforces the fact that she was in a grind to mm-hmm. keep up with, like, the things that were asked of her by her commissioners.
Right.
You know, this is the sort of thing where, especially if you are in a creative role where you primarily get your income by commissions and you are, like, you know, getting commissioned for things that are really lucrative but not necessarily stuff you care about, you can sometimes feel like you're not making any art for yourself.
Right.
And so Tyler's solution is, yeah, let's show you the house of the series that you loved as a child that got you into drawing in the first place.
Yeah, it's cute.
Which is a really cute sort of, like, way to pull her back into, like, oh, I can just draw some things for myself sometimes, as, like, you know, that's something I can do in the loop that might not actually be as viable in the real world, because in the real world, sometimes you do have to, like, be on that grind to make rinds.
Right.
And then we've got Holly, who is a YouTuber who mostly does, like, challenges and videos that, like, please the algorithm.
Yeah.
But she's also, like, made a lot of videos that are just, like, Holly explores the local neighborhood and finds rare, like, tiny dives that have really nice food. And those don't get a lot of views because people don't like them as much. But Holly really likes doing that. And she gets really excited when she finds an udon stall that, like, is full of, like, truck drivers mm-hmm. and taxi drivers who are just there on their lunch break. And of course, Joe, everyone is like, well, what's Tyler gonna do for Joe? How are you gonna fix that? And then Tyler's like, no, I've done nothing. I've done nothing for Joe.
He just needs to get out and be among friends and exercise. So
yeah,
he feels good.
it's literally just like, listen, the muscles were only part of the thing. It's really that he just likes to be around people and feel satisfied in undertaking an activity to its completion.
Yeah.
And because, like,
love Joe.
Weight training is something that has such a long scale,
right.
He didn't really feel satisfied with that because he couldn't see any result. These are all really interesting things. I think that one of the things, after thinking through and mulling over this game, one of the things that sticks out to me a lot is, like, the number of different ways it talks about the process of being a creative person day to day and how your different routines and audience reactions can sort of, like, get to you over time
mm-hmm.
or the way in which you can suffer for not having any sort of, like, progress in your creativity.
Right. And, like, getting back to, like, what is the essence of why you love to do this thing and how do you connect with others in that kind of way? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And then after that, though, we start to see that, like, things are getting pretty rough for Hilda, because every single morning, Hilda wakes up, headbutts Leona, and Leona falls unconscious. And that is the start of her loop. Like, the start of everybody's loop is different. Most people are just in bed. Simon is, like, I think wandering around the streets or something. But Hilda is there in that convenience store parking lot. And her best friend, definitely, you know, super platonic gal pal, falls unconscious. And, like, all the other loopers this entire time have been telling them about, like, how much Leona told them about Hilda and how much she loved Hilda and how much
she missed being able to connect to her. Yeah,
and how much Leona tried to do to keep everybody else grounded until she herself really couldn't, like, handle it anymore without Hilda there. And so Simon eventually says, all right, listen, there's something that I held back about the Maryland group. So, you know, they said that the people who fell into comas, they took them back and they woke up after they got out of the spiral. I omitted the fact that they woke up 2 to 8 years after leaving the spiral. And Hilda's like, no, that's unacceptable. And then we learn a lot about Leona's past from Hilda, that, like, Leona has, like, these extremely strict, overbearing parents who, like, absolutely just blamed her for every failing to get into, like, the best, highest class middle school, the best high school, the best college. And she's failed her entrance exams. And, you know, it's only hanging out there with Hilda after they reconnected that they've really, like, she's felt like Leona was really happy and opening up again.
Right.
And there were, like, periods where they grew distant from each other, and Leona attempted suicide. And Hilda, like, came in, and God, that's a scene that I'm like, damn, let Ryukishi write the rest of that scene. God.
It was also very strange when Hilda just told the others about it. Like, that was a moment where I was like, okay, Hilda.
That was the thing where I was like, this felt more like it should have been, like, an internal monologue for Hilda than.
They don't need to know.
Yeah. It's one of the few moments where it's like, okay, I know that she's doing this as exposition for us, the player.
Right.
But this is one of those that's like, I do think perhaps this could have been couched differently.
That's for Leona to decide, who knows that, yeah.
I mean, yeah, like, if you want, you can think of it as like, okay, maybe Leona told everybody about that.
Right,
but
right.
But I don't think she did.
It was just an odd moment where I, like, was taken out.
It was. One of the few things in this game that you really start to feel like, oh, okay, they definitely sort of felt a little bit compressed in some areas.
Right, right.
To keep it snappy. Anyway, Hilda decides that she is going to try and wake Leona up, and Simon puts a time limit on it, says, listen, if you keep doing that, you yourself will probably, like, spiral into despair and then be in a coma also.
Yeah.
And
yeah, Simon's really worried about how it'll go for Hilda, yeah.
We get this incredible montage of, like, this is the shit that I was hoping would happen in this game.
Right, right.
Of Hilda every morning with Leona on her lap on a park bench, just, like, talking to her and telling her things, and we see, like, what day of the loop it is. We go from, like, loop 80 up to, like, loop 115. And also, Hilda is, like, carrying Leona around in a wheelchair that they've got. They've stopped putting her in the hospital, and they're, like, carrying her around on treasure hunts and trying to figure out, like, okay, how can we keep her involved? Eventually, like, Hilda's breaking down crying while doing this. And so Simon's like, okay, one more day, last chance. I don't want Hilda to also.
And Tyler's like, let me put it all on the line. Let me do it.
Yes. Tyler's like, I know how to fix this. And it's, would you believe that it's with a treasure hunt?
We got to find our time capsule.
The time capsule that we left in second grade. And they go to, like, the school grounds, and they're, like, digging up the school recess grounds to find this time capsule. And they go and eventually do find it. They find the, like, slips of paper all of them put in there. And Hilda starts to read the one that Leona left and is, like, just, like, getting there and almost gets to the point where Hilda has written, like, I love you, or, Hilda almost gets to the point where Leona has written, "I love you, Hilda, and I hope we're always friends." And then you hear Leona actually say, "Yeah, I really hate how nosy and obstinate you are sometimes."
And the toddler is even like, "Yeah, of course, like, someone reading your childhood thoughts is going to get them embarrassed enough to wake up." Like, obviously.
Yes, it's a very good moment. Like, listen, people sometimes do criticize, not just Key. I'm using them kind of as a stand-in here for a lot of, like, there are lots of studios who write games in this sort of, like, very melodramatic style.
Right.
For being this melodramatic and, like, almost, like, predictably, like, okay, of course this is the pivotal moment where things would work
right,
out.
Right.
But, like, I like it. It works for me.
It was fun. And I was just so, like, I didn't realize how much fun it would be to have Leona back, because we lost her so early on in the game. And,
it's
like,
true.
She's such a character, and, like, the energy of Hilda changes so much when she's around. So, like, I just loved having her back.
Yes, it was so good. It's so good. And it was really, really a wonderful scene, and that is when I cried, and I had to take a break from the game for a short period, because I knew that after that, it was like, okay, we've got as much Yuri as we can probably afford to fit in this game.
Yeah, say, heterosexual time has begun. Thank you, Rikishi, for giving us the queer girls in this very heterosexual game.
Yes, because throughout all of this, of course, Tyler has been teaching Mia about treasure hunting. And it's pretty clear early on that, okay, Tyler Mia is the end game ship.
And I was just kind of, because of Key's reputation and because of, like, the very early scene, I was just waiting for the reveal to be that, like, she could not leave the loop or did not want to leave the loop. So, like, I was just kind of waiting for that to happen.
Yeah, so they have a lot of really emotional moments. They talk a lot about, you know, like, their hopes for the future and their past and things like that. They have, like, Tyler takes her on this dramatic treasure hunt.
Very cute Ferris wheel dates.
Yes, literal Ferris wheel dates. Like, takes her and, like, here's one where we're, like, seeing the fireworks over the Ferris wheel. Here's another one where we're going all day on a treasure hunt that leads us to the Ferris wheel. Mia, like, creates a treasure hunt for Tyler as they're preparing. So Simon has, like, been collecting data.
It is so funny that they're like, oh, I've done all this data. I've collected all this data because Tyler loves to go everywhere every day, and I can figure out the time distortions. But then it's like, and it means that our portal to get out of here is going to be here in 3 days. It's like, you didn't do anything, Simon.
It's very funny also because, like, if you realize that the loop resets every day, he has to memorize all of that data and put it in every day.
Yeah.
It's incredible. Anyway, the final treasure hunt that Mia sets up for Tyler, because one of the fun things about this is, like, when they know that they're about to go back, everybody suddenly shifts and they be like, oh, shit. I have to remember not to spend all of the money I have in the world.
Oh shit, I might actually die after this.
Yeah, like, I have to remember not to, like, climb skyscrapers freehand or, like,
Tyler.
And so they have, like, that, and, like, it's very cute because, like, Holly and Rita are, like, going back into, like, trying to remember how to do their crafts because they've spent so long not doing them in the loop. And so Mia creates this treasure hunt for Tyler that takes him around to basically every place that they have been together and ends on the Ferris wheel date, where she has hidden a clue that takes him back to the start and just, like, loops back through the treasure hunt. And she's like, I kind of wish that this treasure hunt could just never end. Would it be too selfish to ask for that to never end? And there's the cute romantic confession that they have, and Tyler
doesn't, he gets the message, but doesn't quite get the message.
Yeah, he, like, sort of responds and understands, but then there's fireworks, because of course there's fireworks at exactly the time where he would, like, respond to the confession. And so the next day is them leaving, and of course Tyler and Joe have to, like, carry the two unconscious guys who they've had in comas through the portal so that they can wake up after. And, you know, let's figure out what we can't do with that. That seems like a fun, straightforward scene, except for at the very end, everybody's going through one by one. Hilda and Leona go through together. Everybody else goes through. Joe goes through with the first guy. And then it's just Tyler and the guy he's got in front of him. And then Mia. And then Mia is like, sorry, I literally won't have a tomorrow if I go back there, so this loop of today is all I have, so I'm just going to stay here, and I think it was my fault that all of this happened in the first place. And so she runs away while the portal is closing, leaving Tyler to sort of, like, debate on, like, do I go back for Mia, but also I don't know where she is, and also this other person is in front of me.
And, like, they make it clear that he can't just throw the other person through the portal. Like, he has to actually carry him through. And
Yeah. So that's like, the dilemma. And he goes through. And so everybody is distraught on the other end. And inside the loop, Mia is just, like, looping over and over again. And we find out her backstory, which is, of course, that she is the girl from the beginning. And that she is bedridden because she has a rare condition that causes her to slip into comas. And she has some good waking days and then other days that are, like, not as good. It's one of those that I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very convenient for the plot.
Yeah.
And
like, she's soon she will hit stage four and she will never wake up. And therefore she does not want to go to the next day where she's going to go through surgery that may not, like, it's just very key. Like, it's just very much like what I was expecting.
It's one of those that's like, all right, listen, it is, I swear, it is possible to write characters in fiction mm-hmm. that have real chronic illnesses.
Yeah, I know. It doesn't have to be this, like, this melodramatic plot thing.
I promise you that there are real chronic illnesses that that have similar sort of, like, dire possible outcomes that you could write into your story.
I guess I don't know I don't know the reality of the illness that they use here, but, like, it is very, like, used as a plot point and not, like, really grounded that much in reality. But
so, to be clear, the syndrome that they talk about in the game, Klein-Levin syndrome, is real, but it is not like it's presented in the game.
Oh, I'm sure.
So in the game, they present, basically, this is a syndrome that causes Mia to, like, spontaneously fall into a coma for, like, weeks or months at a time. And that once she reaches stage four, she will, like, fall into a coma forever.
Like a permanent coma, yeah.
As far as I can tell, and I will disclaim that I am, of course, first not an epidemiologist, not a doctor.
Look this up in 2 minutes, so, like, yeah.
Yes, cursory research, I mean, cursory research that cites academic articles, but I want to reiterate that this is not diagnosis material.
No.
But from what I found is that, like, Klein-Levin syndrome does have hypersomnia, which is, like, you sleep a whole lot.
Sure.
But it's, like, 17 to 20 hours in a given day,
right,
which is a whole lot, but it's not, like, you're in a coma forever permanently. And also, the prognosis section is like, yeah, most patients just spontaneously recover from this. It can last a long time. Like,
right.
Some people can have this for as little as a few months to, like, a dozen years.
Sure.
But, you know, like, they're not in comas for that time. It's mostly, like, you have some days where you just, like, cannot be awake and you're, like, asleep all the time. You also might be, like, extremely hungry or, like, have erratic moods during that time. But
yeah,
that usually the condition just, like, resolves on its own over time. It is not a thing that seems to be, like, stage three, stage four, there's no cure and you're asleep forever. Which is, you know, that's one of those things where it's a step in the right direction in a way that, like, at least from what I'm seeing here, if I am wrong, I will issue an addendum. Please correct me if so. But
oh, yeah.
This does feel like one of those cases where, once again, a writer using a real or imagined chronic illness in a way that's convenient to the plot that doesn't reflect the reality of this for people who have it, which, honestly, it'd kind of be more interesting if you found an illness that sort of, like, matched the characteristics you wanted in the story, right?
Which I think, like, that their probably their intention, but they still, like, had to, like, if your intention of having someone with an illness is to create a scenario where they want to be stuck into a loop and don't want to do their surgery, like, that's going to override the function of, like, what is the life experience of someone who has this illness. And I think that's the problem we regularly see with these kind of scenarios, is, like, it's a utility thing and not, like, based on the experience and, like, the reality of what having these things are about.
Exactly. It goes back to a lot of the other issues that you see where people are more focused, like, a writer is more focused on what can this chronic illness accomplish narratively for me without worrying about any of the complexities of how this impacts the character. It's a convenience.
Definitely more of a uchi-koshi thing. our other man.
Yeah, I mean, like, Ryukishi has done this, like, a little bit, but he normally avoids it.
Yeah. But I think doing a Ki game, like, this is what Ki does, like...
Yeah, and again, this is not unique to them. This is not even unique to... I think there's a tendency we can sometimes feel like, okay, this happens so many times in visual novels, it's a visual novel thing.
Right, no.
I've read a lot of fiction across many mediums. Yeah. Like, this is and a, not like, a film, novels.
Yeah, not just a Japanese media thing, it's, like, everywhere.
Yeah, it's pretty much worldwide as far... I have yet to find... any different, like, culture that has not done some, like, you know, questionable disability and chronic illness writing.
Yeah.
Like this.
Yeah.
It's just something to keep in mind as we think about this. I mean, I like the general idea, right? Like, I like the fact that Mia's conflict is set up as, I like this loop because in this loop I can be alive and have, like...
and awake every day. Like, I have a good day every day. Yeah.
Yeah, basically, like, I have a good day every day, because August 1st on that loop was a good day for me.
Right.
Which is something that, like, I think with chronic illness, people can really relate to.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just that they didn't really tie in any of the other things that might have been, like, signs or signifiers that chronic illness was an element of her life, because they sort of boiled down Klein-Levin syndrome to, oh, I'm either 100% perfectly fine and normal, or I'm asleep.
Right. And it was something that she kept a secret from the others, like, and I think there, that could be really interesting if they dive more into, like, you get a sense of her guilt about the fact that she believes that she was the one who started this because of her wish, and, like, the fact that she doesn't, like, her concern is more, like, the deterioration of her friends, like, she is happy to be stuck in this loop, but by nature of it, of the more people who come into it, the more dangerous and unhealthy it is for them, and, like, that, like, at the core of it, those ideas are really interesting, but because she is, like, a mystery character, like, we don't get that until the end, so.
Yeah, definitely. And so this is what generally sort of, like, sparks the climax of the game, is that Tyler is, like, distraught, bereft, and wants to figure out how to save Mia from this. And meanwhile, everybody else is like, oh, I don't know what to do about this. Like, I have no idea. But Tyler, of course, pushes through and is like, I think I might understand after talking to Mia's mom and realizing that, like, oh, he was the one back then. And she was that girl he gave the little eraser to. And maybe based on the story, if that's real. And then everybody has this moment of like, wait a second. Are you thinking, really, that this fairy tale, that Mia was correct when she said that she used the Triceratops eraser to create a magic spell and sent it along to other people, which her mom donated to a geocache hunting community, that actually caused it? And then Simon is like, well, you know, it's possible through the influence of the web of human collective consciousness that this
created
sort of spell. And I'm like, yes, thank you, Ryukishi. This is exactly the sort of, like, shorthand, extremely abbreviated, like, I love it.
Yeah.
It's perfect. That is exactly, all the other sort of, like, sci-fi things in this, I'm like, that's fine. But this one, I was like, okay, no. This is good, actually. I love this one. It's like when you hear a Schrodinger's cat drop.
I love magical witch, magical witch Mia through the shared consciousness of geocaching.
Yeah, because of course, like, it being passed through so many hands in the geocaching just amplified that Triceratops eraser's power.
Yeah,
and so we see Mia then waking up in that world in the loop again. She sees the people around her, and she has this heartbreaking moment where she tells Tyler everything. And because, of course, Tyler is replaying the day that he left
the loop. It's so interesting, like, this, like, we talked a little bit in our last bonus episode about, like, how stories are about where characters' consciousness is. And, like,
yeah.
And, like, this is that, too. Like, this is not Tyler, because Tyler can only live this one day. But he is not acting, he's not doing the same thing every day. He's still himself reacting to her. But it's like almost like Tyler got split into two versions. There's this one version of Tyler that exists in this one day still, in that cycle with her. But then his consciousness has moved on. He is living the future. And it's just, it's like, it doesn't make sense, but it's so interesting. And it's a little bit of like branching like universes to a certain extent. But she kind of calls him like a ghost or an echo. But like every character is still able to act in their own way and like process what is being told to them. It's just that their consciousness can only exist for that day, and they are like replaced with a new consciousness every day. It's interesting.
Yeah, because basically she thinks that maybe he can just stay here with me. I know that's sort of selfish, but maybe I can just convince him. And they have like a really dramatic romantic exchange, and she like says, okay, wait, hold on, we need a code word to make sure that you don't forget.
Tyler, why?
And then they make the code word, her texting him, I love you.
Tyler is the one who comes up with it. I'm like, why would you do that to her?
Yeah. Because, I mean, like, it makes sense because at that point it's like, oh, they're fully smitten, like, new relationship.
But, like, at least mode. Think, like, how weird that would be to you who didn't know this morning.
Yeah, exactly, but I don't think, listen.
He does not think it.
Tyler doesn't have brain cells for that. He's got brain cells for geo-hunting.
He doesn't have the ability to think negatively. Everything's going to work out. It's fine.
Yeah, and so she does that in the morning, and he texts back, I love you too, Mia. And she thinks, oh my god, it worked. And then he's like, is this some sort of new prank or something?
Tyler.
And she's like, oh no. Which, like,
I also feel bad for that version of Tyler, because he definitely, like, woke up to Mia saying, I love you, and then, like, ghosting him completely and them not being able to find her. So, like, yes! He probably had a real rough day.
Yeah. So, you know, this happens for a while. Like, she just, like, goes through the day when everybody else leaves by, like, hiding from them or doing different things. Like, the portal is no longer there. They just, like, go towards an empty spot in the air, and then they vanish because that's where they left through the portal. And eventually the world starts breaking down, and then we realize that, like, oh, that, like, ghostly figure that Hilda saw in the graveyard at the start, that was the echo of Mia in her, like, pajama gown searching for the Triceratops, because she's like, oh, no, I should have just been braver and faced the world in the future knowing that it was uncertain that I might actually die at the end of this loop. But I shouldn't have tried to stay here all on my own, because it's actually not really... I don't like being isolated on my own.
Yeah.
And also, I wouldn't want to have kept everybody else here either. So she goes and she's stumbling around this, like, collapsing world looking for the Triceratops. Meanwhile...
This is the part where I was like, this game is so unserious.
Yeah. Meanwhile, they decide that they are going to use geo-hunting to find that Triceratops and break the spell, because if Tyler finds it...
We've got to connect to all your followers, Holly, and Tyler, yes, connect to all your geo-hunting buds, and we'll get everyone to search for the Triceratops, and it'll be fine. We'll figure it out.
Yes. They're... Yes.
It's cute, but I was by that point I was like, okay.
Yeah, basically Simon has woken up the two other guys who are definitely like,
who did not deserve
such kinds of guys. One of them is definitely like a dude who's, like, borderline a pickup artist.
But, like, I definitely imagine him as, like, a super fancy boy who is also, like, super flirty.
Yes, he is a fancy posh boy who is, like, gentlemen, we must do everything.
They don't have sprites, so we're just, like, imagining it based on Rikishi's writing of their... Like, definitely Rikishi imagined them as, like, additional, like, character types to go along with the other three loopers.
Yeah.
But, like, they don't get a sprite, so you only get it through their text, and it's, like, so
yeah,
funny.
And their voices. It's very funny. One of them is the sort of, like, listen, gentlemen, we must do everything for this fair maiden in distress, and, lo, maybe if you accomplish this for her, perhaps she will favor you with a hug, or more.
Like, what? Like, really? Key, you did these two dirty. They deserve a sprite.
Yeah. And then the other one is just, like, a super, like, hype man, club promoter style guy who's, like, getting all of his friends and buddies. Like, my strong point is that I'm so popular and cool.
I know everybody. Yeah.
Yeah. And so they eventually, like, as the core loopers group is, like, wearing themselves down, they're getting all of these other people. And eventually those other people also lose steam. But, you know, like, it starts raining and then... Tyler's like, no, I have to, before this day ends. I was really thinking at a certain point that it was going to be like, oh god, are we going to do a thing where we, like, zip, like, 30 years in the future before Mia gets out? But no, it's, like, the next day.
Yeah, yeah.
Because apparently it has to be, like, before the end of the next day.
I guess they don't really explain it, but I guess there's some sort of permanence that...
Yeah,
the time
she's gone through the surgery also, but she's not waking up, and the doctors are like, well, we just have to wait and see, and everybody's like, well, it's because she's still stuck in
her consciousness is not here.
So
yeah.
Tyler and Mia both have this dramatic moment that I wish this game had just, like, a couple more CGs.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, like, to be fair, I often play games and wish that they had a couple more CGs because I like those things.
Yeah.
But, like, there's this great imagery in Ryukishi's writing that often is not echoed in the game. And I always wish that I could see it. Because a lot of times this game will use, like, a shot of the clouds or a white screen for really descriptive text. In this case, it's Mia and Tyler both reaching for the cache with the yellow Triceratops eraser in it.
Yeah.
And finding it there at the same time. And their hands, like, overlapping through time and space. And as they do it, like, Mia appears sort of, like, in that space briefly, and they hug and have, like, a really touching reunion conversation. And then Mia, like, vanishes and evaporates.
Right.
Which, of course, Tyler, like, freaks out about, but then they remember that she is,
actually have a body here.
she has a body. This is just her consciousness, actually, in a way. And so... Eventually, we get past the credits. It's actually interesting the way they choose to do the credit cut, because basically they do the credit cut where Tyler's like, wait as long as it takes for her to wake up.
Yeah.
And then, like, you cut to, like, 3 days later.
Yeah. I was expecting at least, like, 2 years or something. Like,
yeah, like, some short, like, short but, like, pretty significant period of time, like 7 months or something.
Yeah.
But no, it was like... It's like, all right, next week.
Yeah, they're like, they're still, like, everyone's still coming to visit her every day. Like, it hasn't even gotten to a point where it's become, like, normal. It's just, like...
Yeah.
But that's fine. This, like I said, this game, deeply optimistic in a way that, like, I know that sometimes we talk about the fact that, like, we really like it when a visual novel has, like, a positivity spin. Like, when it's not, like, super dark. But, like, I do think that this visual novel was, like... pushing my limits on this, where I was just like, okay, this is silly.
Yeah. I think that point is going to be different for everyone, right? Like, the point at which you feel like something is, like, too positive and optimistic to, like, really take super seriously.
Yeah.
Or the point at which something is, like, too pessimistic for you to really engage with seriously. And I do think that this one's going to be one that a lot of people find is very fun, but, like, very, very optimistic about, like, the state of the world and the way that it engages with its themes. Like, that simply by this realization and the miracle of finding, you know, like, your confidence and bravery and support in other people, that things are going to go extremely well very quickly.
Right.
Whereas, like, it contrasts with the very serious portrayals that are of, like, actual depression and, I mean, like, it's not exactly clear, but it's, like, kind of implied at some points that, like, the characters who, like, really lost it in the spiral had psychotic breaks.
Right.
Basically. Right. And, like, Yukishi, of course, like, pretty good historically at writing those in a more grounded way. So it just contrasts with that being a little bit, like, pat and a little bit neat tied with a bow on it.
Like, the fact that Tyler is never, like yes, he has to grapple with these things with Mia, but, like, he never stops believing, and that's fine. And, like, it's like, I think that that is very fun in stories, but it's hard to earn, and because of the length of this game and, like, what it's trying to do in a short amount of time, I just was like, okay, this is silly but fun. But I was not, like, I think that there is you can get to the point where it feels really good that everyone's working together and everything's coming up and, like, we're finally getting out of a dark turn. But, like, the dark turns never really caught me. So, like, I always knew that we were getting to that outcome, so it didn't feel, mm-hmm. like... I was not emotionally with it when they were like, we just have to all work together and we have to believe. And I think other people would play this and be like totally into it. So it's not really a criticism. Yeah. It's just like I was not on the same page.
Yeah. I mean, like I really enjoyed this game, but it peaked for me with the Leona and Hilda stuff.
Yeah.
And then after that, I was like, okay, this is also fine.
Yeah.
And again, I do think, you know, this is not quite to the level of, I know sometimes people play games that feel, like, overly optimistic and they feel like it's disingenuous right. in a way because, like, I think a lot of the really high points of Ryukishi's work tends to be that he pretty fairly grapples with the conditions of the world being, like, pretty rough
right.
and how a lot of the characters do find something positive but still have to grapple with the fact that, like, shit's bad out
right.
there.
Right.
This game doesn't really have a shit's bad out there part of it.
I guess I was expecting more for things to get bad, but, like, the things that got bad were exactly what I was expecting to get bad.
Things that have a resolution, like the surgery for Mia resolved perfectly fine, right. even though she was, like, at the cusp of it being too late. All of these sorts of things in a way that's, like, a very satisfying, clean conclusion.
Right.
Again, this is a sort of thing that I think we want to thread the needle on it in that this is not something we're saying is bad. It's just something we want to clarify.
Like, this is the kind of, like, I want happy endings. Like, I was not on the same page with it when it was happening. I was just like, especially when, like, everyone was working together and it was just, like, very silly in a way that was funny and amusing. But, like, I was not, like, there emotionally.
I took a screen cap of it, but, like, there's a CG that they have of, like, Simon doing the cool anime glasses push-up at a desk while all the other loopers are, like, highlighted behind him with, like, one face in a cutaway panel, like you do in, like, a big group attack or, at the start of a series.
And they're all doing geocaching.
But, yeah, it's just all of them going out to geocache on the app. I think that moment really highlights the vibe of this game.
And I think part of it is, like, there's no real, like, concrete grasp of, like, what they are doing in this. It's just like, oh, there's always more geocaches to search. And there's always, we've eliminated that area. Oh, we've eliminated that area. But there's no, like, real sense of, like, how big of a scope this is, how much they're making progress. It's just, like, it's fine because at the end of the day, right at the last minute, it doesn't matter because Tyler and Mia will be where they need to be, where the eraser is. So it's just like all that was just like to get to the same outcome, I guess.
Yeah. In a sense, I think that this is also a game that, like, I could pick up and play this just about any time.
Sure.
Because it is a game that I do not necessarily need to, like, brace myself emotionally
right.
for, or I also don't need to, like, listen, I've been sick for the past couple days, and I had no problem getting through this, whereas, like, normally things that are, like, that require more of my attention or, like,
right.
emotional engagement do.
Right.
And granted, I did cry a lot, so, like, maybe that part's not actually accurate at all. But, you know, like, part of the thing about, like, the benefit of this game being a little bit unserious in ways right. is that it is a pretty easy thing to pick up, and so could be pretty enjoyable to a lot of people.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I think that that's the sort of thing is that, ultimately, this is not, like, exactly the sort of story that we normally gravitate to, and it's a little bit above the level of optimism that Sarah yeah. and I often, like, really go for and enjoy. But that's not really, like, a value judgment no. necessarily. I think it's more like, this is the sort of thing that this is, and maybe it's for you, and maybe it's not, or maybe it's just for you in a certain mood.
Right, yeah.
One thing that is interesting about this game is, like, the way that ultimately, like, once they're out of the loop, the only thing that remains from the loop is their memories of the loop.
Right.
Which is fascinating to me. Like, the time they spent in the loop, other than the fact that, like, Kuro and Kai both had to, like, wake up from comas, didn't really have any lasting physical impacts on any of
them. Also, LOL at Simon using the same trick yes. that he's Tyler like, used.
Oh, I learned from Hilda how to do that, so I just found the most embarrassing things about Kuro and Kai and started reading them aloud in their hospital room.
And they're fine now, it's fine.
And they're awake. It's incredible. Again, like, this game is so fun in those moments. But also, like, you know, I can easily see why some people would find it a little bit tedious in those moments. Again, set your expectations appropriately.
Yeah, yeah.
I do think that one thing is, of course, like, going in with Ryukishi, I was always, like, kind of hoping. I was like, okay, I know this. Mm-hmm. I know what kind of games Key makes.
Yeah.
I know the expectation. And this is not Clannad After Story.
Right,
so,
right.
I wasn't really expecting it to get super dark, and so it kind of fell in line with about what I was hoping yeah. for, but, you know, like, generally, this is sort of, like, a thing that I think is, like, light and breezy. Like, there's some heavy content, yeah. but I think that, in general, the game is very optimistic about a lot of these things, and also optimistic about, like, the outcome of a time loop.
Right.
If that makes sense. And, like, you know, we've already played, last month we played Slay the Princess. Was that last month? That feels like it was 7 years ago, Sarah.
It was last month.
Have we been trapped in some sort of time loop that we've forgotten that makes all of the months feel much longer than they actually are?
Well, then I would have gotten more accomplished on one of the things that I need to get accomplished if that were the case.
Anyhow, the great thing about this game, though, is I think that it does set us up very nicely for the next couple games we're also going to do, which are also about time loops.
It'll be interesting going from this to Steins Gate because, one, I think that what my general takeaway from playing this game as a Key game written by Ryukishi was, like, mm-hmm. I would much rather play this game written by Ryukishi than written by anyone else. Like, if it was going to be written by someone, if I was going to play a Key game, it might as well be written by Ryukishi.
Agreed. I mean, wait, did you play Clannad After Story or did you just watch the adaptation?
I don't think I did After Story.
Okay.
Just the main game. Because After Story is the one with the other character.
After Story is the one where, with the child after, oh, sorry, I shouldn't spoil it if any listeners want to play Clannad and Clannad After Story.
I don't know. I definitely watched the anime, and I definitely played some of it, but I could not tell you now what I did.
Anyhow, yeah, so this game, you know, when we talk about Steins Gate, I don't know very much about Steins Gate, again, other than the parts that we're going to skip for the transphobia of it all.
Yeah.
But,
and, like, it is definitely, like, we're going from Key, which we associate with heterosexuality, to a game that is even more, like, just, like, the heterosexuality.
After that, actually, I don't know if Raging Loop is heterosexual or not, but I'm just, like, going embraced for it to be. I've actually, so, listen, Sarah and I have valiantly, there's been, like, YouTube recommendations over the past few weeks of, like, different Raging Loop or other time loop visual novel recommendations being shown to us on YouTube, and I've valiantly resisted clicking on them.
We're kind of going in blind with Raging Loop. We'll see how it goes.
Yes. But, you know, we want to sort of like take a look at all of these different time loop things and the outcomes and the, what is their thesis on the impact of the loop? And I think that Loopers presents a really interesting look in like the outcome of the loop is actually entirely psychological.
Right. Right.
And that's an interesting point to take with it, wherein like, you know, other things, like we're going to talk about the butterfly effect in a lot more detail in Steins Gate.
Yeah, and like this game was like about the, how do you survive the mundanity of life more than it was about like time stuff, shenanigans.
Exactly. Like how do you deal with, like Leona's perspective, like how do you deal with being trapped here, unable to access your best friend who is like technically actually right there? Like Leona could actually hang out with Hilda, mm-hmm. and she did throughout the loop, but Hilda like never remembered. She wasn't in the
there
loop.
There is a disconnect between the two of you. You cannot grow together or
yes.
Like there is a like the kind of potential horror of like someone not being able to be present for this kind of part of your life kind of thing.
Exactly. And someone who like, you know, cares deeply about you and who you're really close to. Mm-hmm. And they're just like metaphysically incapable of keeping up with what's going on with you mentally, emotionally in your life.
Right.
And oh God, I just made myself so upset thinking about what if they tried to do code words. The girls in this game were pretty good, huh?
They were good.
But yeah, we're going to be thinking about that and the ways that time loops sort of like have an impact on the characters and also like the world at large that we sort of see develop and unfold as you go through these games. It is pretty interesting the different approaches different stories take to time loops and their overall impact. And I really liked this one's angle of like, listen, the hard thing is literally getting up and living through mm-hmm. the same day over and over again.
Yeah, I don't know when this was written, but I definitely couldn't, like, divorce it because it came out in 2021 from, like, the initial experience of quarantining and COVID. I don't know if it was in any way, like, it may have just been in production while that was going on, but, like, that kind of mundanity of the day and, like, how do you get up and, like, how do you function when you're disconnected from the rest of the people in your life? I couldn't really divorce it from that, whether it was intentional or not.
Yeah, I, again, not extensive research on this, but based on the articles that I could see, it looks like the only concrete announcement we have is that in about 2020, there was an announcement that Yukishi would be the one who's writing the scenario. I think like late 2020, mm-hmm. they announced that Loopers was going to exist and Yukishi was going to be writing the scenario. Who knows how much pre-production was in there, but like, I think that that lines up pretty perfectly with what you were saying as well.
Right.
Also, in examining that, it turns out that this is not the first time Yukishi and 7th Expansion have worked with Key.
Yeah, I saw something about that.
And so, you know, I don't think that we will dig into other Key visual novels or games in general in the future.
Well,
but
yeah, we'll see if we really want to dig into Key. we Clannad might be interesting to do eventually, but Clannad is interesting because as popular as it was, I definitely heard just as much about the branching one with Tomoyo, which is the one I associate with Tomoyo After, which is different than what you were mentioning earlier, which was the Clannad stuff. I don't really remember how those things break down, but yeah, I don't know. Possibilities for the future.
If you don't know too much about Clannad, there's just, like, some very interesting things, in addition to the fact that it was very, I think it was pretty popular.
It also just had a very interesting and kind of unusual narrative framework. Like, it in of itself, it is, like, what you expect of a dating sim, like scenario, Cutter's actual.
Yeah.
But like there's some interesting things that they kind of wrap around the story with.
Yes. And like I mentioned before earlier, like Clannad after story is like a whole like extension of that, that you normally is not something you typically see with dating sims.
And then there's Tomio after, which is like a different character and is more sexual erotic stuff. I don't know. It's a whole thing. But for now, we're focusing on time loop stuff. And so I'm kind of taking the lead on next episode's Steins Gate. It was one of those things where, like, we talked a lot about, like, we didn't really want to do Steins Gate. But then the more I thought about it, like, the problem with Steins Gate is it's, like, 35% one of the best visual novels I've ever played. And 65% one of the worst visual novels I've ever played. So it'll be interesting taking Runa on this journey, but like we said, we're gonna, I actually, before we were talking about doing it as a bonus episode, but it was kind of too intensive to do as a bonus episode, so we've kind of put it in with these other kind of narrative loop stories, and I've kind of broken it down no commentary let's play for Runa to watch, and what we might do is I can make those available for public on our Patreon, maybe, if people want to follow along too. But like cutting out like the stuff with Luca, the actively transphobic stuff, and also just like the stuff that's really tedious, and kind of limiting it only to the things that I think will be interesting to talk about in terms of like how it's navigating the butterfly effect. I have a lot to say about like how the butterfly effect in narrative tends to be like deeply heterosexual and deeply like, I don't know, the way it gets used as, like, an avenue of this perspective, I guess, on heterosexual romance is something that needs to be sacrificed for the greater good, and, like, this idea of, like, the future cannot be changed. There's so much interesting stuff about, like, how
it does, in media. It does often feel to me when I see butterfly effect type stories is that the butterfly effect basically is a rubber band that will always pull you back to the status quo.
And Steins Gate is actively engaging with that, and I think it actually comes up with a really good solution. I think the end of that game is why, Runa, I want you to engage with it. And I think you'll enjoy it.
I am excited. I mean, like, it's not going to be like the experience of, because I do think like the experience of playing Steins Gate is probably the one where you also have to sit through all of the transphobia. So that's, I'm probably getting like a rosier picture of the game than most people would.
Yeah, there is a version of Steins Gate where I'm like, this is great. Where I love the main character, but I can't, right? Because like there's all this other stuff they've written with him too. And it's like, I hate it. And also, it's very important to me. And, you know.
Yeah. It's also one of those things where, like, normally I would, listen, it's not necessarily just that there's tons of transphobia that I'm, like, okay with reading an abridged version of the game. Right. It's partly also literally for time constraint purposes.
Yeah. It's long.
So, yeah, it's extremely long. You know, like, if we were to cover it in two episodes, I think that there wouldn't be a ton for us
to cover. We'd be talking about the things we don't like. And I think my approach to this was, like, I would rather us cut out the stuff that we know would be miserable. And instead of, like, we can make it clear to y'all listeners, like, the stuff sucks. But, like, I don't know how much you, like, how much do we really want to talk about the thing that everyone knows, which is that the stuff sucks. And instead, like, can we abridge it to where, like, we can talk about the things that it's doing well, with the caveat that there's so much stuff that sucks in it. So that's kind of my goal.
Yeah, in a way, this is as much an episode about simply the theme of the butterfly effect and its use in stories.
Yeah, I want to talk about, like, other examples, too.
Yeah. Steins Gate is just like the main lens that we're focusing on, so this is not something that you should expect us to do in the future, where like we're splitting up parts and pieces of a visual novel. It's pretty much just for Steins Gate.
Yeah, it's like how do we cover the interesting things about Steins Gate without having to like delve into the things that suck? So this was kind of our solution. I've written up, like, I'll have to relook at it because this. the last time I looked at it was like a year ago, but like I wrote up like little summaries of the stuff that gets skipped, and then kind of keeping in sections that I think are valuable to get to the ending. And I can share that on Patreon for anyone. And it, like, even if you're not a patron of ours, so you'll have access to it if you want to follow along. But
and our most recent bonus episode, speaking of Patreon, is already up. It is on fantasy romance comics, and Sarah walked me through a lot of the different interesting tropes and trends recently that she's seen in fantasy romance webcomics, manhwa, and a few other places. Our next bonus episode is
probably House of Leaves.
House of Leaves. Oh, well, I was pausing for dramatic effect, but yes, it's
I know, but we keep putting it off because it takes more involvement.
Together. Yeah, but please look forward to that. So March is actually going to be like quite a packed month for us. We're going to have House of Leaves and an episode on Steins Gate, the Butterfly Effect, and time loops in a lot of different stories as
well. Yeah, a lot of things I've been looking forward to talking about in March.
Yes, yes. So please look forward to that, dear listeners. And as always, you can find us on Twitter or on co-host at Say It In Red. Actually, no, on Twitter we are at Say It In Red Pod. And you can find us on Patreon at Say It In Red. You can also find me, Runa, at Cacomancy on Twitter or co-host or runa-lior.itch.io. And Sarah, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter, YouTube, co-host at Dolls and Crafts.
Excellent. And until next time, dear listeners, if you're really into geocaching, basically I would like, so tell me what the apps are and then put in the coordinates and, if you, you know, when you find the little thingy, write your name in the logbook, and when you do, please make sure that you say it in red.